Hey everybody, welcome to a super special episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. Today we have Rabia Chaudhry. You know her, she's amazing. She's the person who wrote the book called Adnan's Story that turned into a documentary on HBO called The Case Against Adnan Syed. You must have seen it. If you haven't seen it, you gotta see it. This is the young man who was convicted of murder in Maryland and is still in prison. And it's a crazy, crazy story. Rabia wrote the book about it because she knew him since childhood. And it continues. It keeps going. So Rabia all of a sudden becomes this prolific podcaster who has gone on and done a podcast about Adnan's story. It was featured in the podcast called Serial, which was one of the biggest podcasts in the world. She then went on and did her own podcast called Undisclosed, where she helps other people who've been wrongfully convicted of murder, and she digs deep and she goes into their stories and she tells their stories. You got to listen to her podcast. She's got another podcast called Hidden Gin. She's got another podcast called Nighty Night. This lady is prolific. She's on our podcast today. Amazing, amazing, eloquent. You're going to want to listen to this, and you're going to want to follow her across the board. She's also going to talk to us about all of the wrongful convictions of Muslim men in America after 9/11. Did I tell you? She's a lawyer. She knows what she's talking about. And lastly, she's here to tell us that you should not smoke weed and date in high school, or you could end up in prison for a life. All of that and more right now on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Maz Jobrani. Hey. Jobrani Maz. Oh, Maz Jobrani.
Hey, Jobrani.
Mazzy, Mazzy. Oh, Maz, 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 Maz.
Hey.
I got a podcast. Oh,
Back to School. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Thank you once again. I am your host, Maz Jobrani. This is my co-host, Tehran. How are you, Tehran?
I'm so excited for today's show.
Dude, so excited. Let me tell you how I came across Rabia. I knew Rabia from all of her work, and she is this eloquent, just well-spoken, brilliant human being. And our friend who was on our show before, Wajahid, who was on our show recently, whose book came out recently. He had me on a panel talking about his book, and Rabia was on that panel. So we exchanged some emails, and I said, Rabia, would you be on our podcast? She said, sure. And I'll tell you, my wife, Preetha, who knows what's going on in the world, she's very much in tune with pop culture and what's happening. She usually doesn't get too excited about my guests. But when I told her Rabia Chaudhry's on the show, she said, oh, my God. She was so excited, and I'm so excited. You guys are going to love her. Tehran, how did you know Rabia and her? Had you watched the documentary on Adnan Syed on HBO?
I think everyone watched the documentary or at least heard about it from Serial. I'm not even the Serial person, but when Adnan's story first hit, to begin with, because I'm from the area, meaning Baltimore is approximately 45 minutes away from DC, it was a big story to hit. And then when it came back on Serial, everyone I knew was talking about it. I mean, it was a huge story. And then it was on HBO, and just Rabia was like this spearhead and leader who was like, if you ever get in trouble, that's who you want to call. Like, she was, think about it, how many times something's ever happened to you and you wish you had done something about it, or someone had done something. Well, Rabia was simply someone's like, why isn't someone doing something about this? It looked in the mirror, said, wait, I am someone, and did something about it.
Yeah, I want you guys to listen to this episode, but then I want you to go back and start watching the documentary on HBO Max, which is The Case Against Adnan Syed. We'll talk about this more in the episode, but basically he was this high school student of Pakistani descent dating this Asian American girl in high school. And a little while later, the Asian American girl goes missing, and then they find her body, and then they basically say it must have been him, and they convict him. And Rabia, who is our guest on this podcast, had known Adnan from childhood, and she was in law school at the time, and she's the one who, as Tehran said, spearheaded trying to find and expose all the holes in the case. And currently, Adnan still sits in federal prison for life for the murder of this young lady, who's, and that's a tragedy in many ways. So the story is amazing. You're going to want to watch the documentary from beginning to end. You're going to want to listen to Rabia, and you're going to want to go back and listen to all of her podcasts across the board. She is prolific. She's amazing. And I'm excited. I'm just going to stop talking because I think we should get into the podcast. Real quickly, Tehran, where do people find you?
At I Am Tehran all across the board, and touring with Maz Jobrani, coming to your city soon.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm at Maz Jobrani across the board. Tell us what you think of this episode. Do us a favor. Share this episode with others. We want to get these stories out there. We want to get this podcast out there more and more. Tehran and I are back on tour. We're excited. We will be coming to Tempe, Arizona. We'll be coming to Vancouver, Surrey, Canada, Calgary, Washington, D.C., Kennedy Center in March, back to Burbank. We're all over the place. You can go to MazJobrani.com, see all of our dates. I'm coming to Europe. Maybe I'll put Tehran in the suitcase and bring him with me. We'll do whatever we can, all right? So let's just get to it. We're going to talk now to Rabia Chaudhry on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school, yeah.
Rabia Chaudhry, welcome to Back to School with Maz Jobrani. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here.
We are so excited to have you. I mean, Rabia, I've concluded that you are the Pakistani version of Shonda Rhimes in the podcast world. You're super prolific.
Shonda Rhimes would, like, if she was in the grave, she'd turn in the grave. But thank you so much for that. I'll take it.
Well, listen, I have a million questions. Tehran has a million questions. We have a lot of things we want to talk to you about. Out the gate, told my son about you and his question. Here's Dara's question for Rabia. 3, 2, and go, Dara.
Hi, Ms. Chaudhry. I have a question for you. Do you think Adnan being Muslim had an effect on his conviction?
Oh my God, what a great question. Also, he's adorable. I love him, I don't even know him yet. Yeah, 1,000%. And the reason I can say that with such confidence is that Adnan's religion and ethnicity was mentioned over 300 times at his trial. Let me tell you, no prosecutor is gonna do that unless there's a reason for it. Like, why do you mention a 17-year-old kid's religion and ethnicity 300 times at trial? Jurors who were later questioned about who convicted him were asked about this and said they were very concerned about the religious motivations behind this crime. And I remember sitting through portions of his trial when the prosecutor called to the witness stand other, like, kids in the community, other Muslim kids, and asked them questions like, tell us how many times you pray a day in the mosque. How many times would Adnan come? Where do the women stand when you pray? Like, it has nothing to do with the crime. There's no relevance to the what he's being charged with. But it's about creating this atmosphere of othering him, making people feel, the jurors feel like this community is weird. At his bail hearing, the prosecutor said, specifically, and we had like 300 community members at the bail hearing, 12 of them putting up their homes for his bail. You know, doctors, lawyers, you know how our community is. They've never been in court before, but they're there for this kid. And the prosecutor said, Your Honor, these people here who have gathered, they are the people who will help him leave this country. They will help him run, because in their culture, it is acceptable to kill a woman if she has, like, humiliated you or something. And then she said there's a pattern of Pakistani men killing women and then fleeing to Pakistan. It was a complete lie. She later had to write a letter to the judge to apologize. But based on that, he denied bail. And, his religion came up over and over and over again. And so 100%
Did Adnan have the worst defense attorney? How many objections went into this trial? Objection. Relevance. Objection. Bias.
Before you answer that, let's just, for the people who don't know, because it was an HBO documentary and it was best New York Times bestselling book that you wrote about the case against Adnan Syed. Yeah. Just give us the broad strokes of that case and how you knew Adnan, just so people catch up as they're listening, and then answer Tehran's question, if you don't mind, about who was this defense attorney and why didn't
totally.
They?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was in law school in 1999, and my younger brother, his name is Saad, he's 6 years younger than me. His best friend was this young boy named Adnan Syed. And I've known Adnan since he was 12 years old, because he's my little brother's best friend. they lived in the same community as my parents, very close to a big mosque in Baltimore. He was born and raised there. And in 1999, a girl from their high school disappeared. Her name was Haymond Lee. She left school. Her body was found a month later in some nearby woods. Adnan and her had dated for like 6 months the prior year. She was dating somebody else, though, at the time she was killed. But very early on, the police decided this was a Muslim honor killing. It's literally in a memo, like in the police file. This is a Muslim honor killing. And we're talking about a 17-year-old kid who's like partying and doing pot and dating girls. I mean, you know, like they want to make him out to be a fundamentalist jihadi as also like, you know, an all-American teenager. But like it was so convoluted, but the jury fell for it. So I just knew Adnan, like, you know, as a kid. And he was like one of the nicest kids in the community. I was like, honestly, if it was my brother, I might have been like, well, I don't know. But Adnan, no way. He was just the kindest, like never been in conflict, always just the nicest kid. And he already started talking to other girls too. They were both honor roll students, going to graduate very soon. Anyhow, so they arrested him from the get-go. I was the closest, you know, in 1999, nobody from our community was going to law school. And so I was the closest thing we had to a lawyer. So I was very involved in helping the parents navigate like what was happening in the courts. Of course, I never represented him. I was a student. But that gets me to the lawyer you're talking about. We hired what we were told was one of the best criminal defense attorneys in Baltimore. Her name was Christina Gutierrez, and she was top of the game maybe 15 years prior. What we didn't know at the time of Adnan's trial was that she was very, very sick. She had nine murder cases she was representing at the same time, which is unconscionable for even the best lawyer. She was doing it alone. She had lost all her partners because apparently embezzlement. She was so sick, she died shortly thereafter. And then she was disbarred after she died because of the amount of complaints, client complaints that she got at the Attorney Bar Commission. Like nobody in the history of the Maryland Bar has had so many complaints filed against them as Christina Gutierrez. And the Bar Association had to pay out tens of thousands of dollars in those claims because she was that incompetent. She was sick. Like I remember sitting in closing arguments and thinking she can't even finish a sentence. Like
when you say sick, what was it? Was it like a cancer or something? She was basically like deteriorating her health.
She had some
diabetes.
She had some kind of cognitive like disability. Like even there were two trials, and even in the span of those 3 or 4 months, I saw a real severe cognitive decline. Like she was more lucid and articulate in the first trial. The second trial, which is the one we lost, she was a mess. I didn't know what was wrong with her, and to this day, we have tried to get but her son gave an interview and said, yeah, she was really sick in those days. She was doing things like demanding $10,000 in cash in a paper bag from Adnan's parents, which they delivered. We believe there might've been drug use. And we don't know because her medical files remain sealed, even though we've asked for them.
I mean, in interviews, in post interviews, because she was a very famous attorney, the concept was she had severe MS that was compounded by onset diabetes. That's the, debilitating behaviors. And that's why she was disbarred afterwards, because it was something that she's, even though it's medical, something she should disclose because it interrupted her cognitive abilities and reasoning abilities.
This is our kind of understanding of it. We just don't know for 100% because we've never been able to get, the medical files. We've been told by people close to her that this was the disability. Others have told us that they believe she had cancer. I'm not 100% sure, but something was very wrong with her. And what really was shocking for me was I was just a law student watching this thinking something's really wrong here, but that the judge and the prosecutor who watch attorneys litigate day in and day out didn't stop her and say, you are not competent enough to represent this client. Like something is wrong here. That's what it was. Yeah. You know, when you get a wrongful conviction, it means everything's gone wrong. The defense is like everything has screwed up. Nothing could save that defendant.
So there's so many questions. So first of all, I've seen the HBO documentary, and it kind of leaves us at the end where through the journey, you show a lot of stuff that just didn't quite add up for Adnan's conviction. And at some point, a court comes out in Baltimore or in Maryland and says, you know what, you should go back to trial and retry this because there was a lot of discrepancies, et cetera. But then another court comes in and says, no, that's not going to change the decision. So therefore, he should remain in prison, correct?
Yeah, that's what happened. We won two appeals. So, you know, the appellate process is hierarchy. You go up and up and up in the appellate courts. We won two appeals, which didn't mean that it granted him freedom. It meant it just gave him a new trial, which he deserved. And every time we won, the state would appeal our win. So they would go to the next court up. Finally, at the highest court level of Maryland, we lost by one vote. It was 7 judges. It was 4-3. And they reinstated the conviction and said he doesn't get a new trial. That was 3 years ago.
And so he's been in prison for how long? And he's there for the rest of his life at this point?
Yeah, he's sentenced to life. And he's been there since 1989. So what, it's been 23
years. We're actually on, well, almost 23 years, because we're actually, today is the 23rd anniversary of when they found her body.
Oh, is that right?
Oh my God, you're right. It's February 9th.
It's February 9th. So
that's when we're recording it. It won't come out February 9th, but for people listening, that was the 20th. Wow. Yeah. So Robbie, let me take this, because now it's interesting, because artists who become known for one thing keep being asked about that one thing, but then they go on and do other things. And you, I consider you not just a lawyer, but you're also an artist and you're a creator. And so that story of Adnan is what got you into this world. Because originally, correct me if I'm wrong, you were in law school to just be a lawyer. You weren't going to be an author and a podcaster and all this other stuff, or was that always in the back of your mind?
Oh no, 100% no. You know, honestly, I think we were all naive as a community, and also me as a law student, thinking, oh, you know what? They just got it wrong. The appellate process will fix this. I had no idea how the criminal system worked. And when it didn't fix it, and we were 10, 12, 13 years on, and we were still fighting appeals, and I had to testify once because I found his alibi witness, but she refused to come to court. That's when I was like, F this. The courts are not going to do it. We're never going to get justice in courts. And that's when I said, Adnan, you know, I grew up watching like Dateline and 2020 and all the, I was like, we need an investigative journalist to like really figure out what happened and bring us some new evidence. And that's when I reached out to Sarah Koenig. In those years, I had decided from the jump that there's no way I'm doing criminal law. I'm sorry about that. That I was never going to do criminal law because it was just too emotionally painful to watch people go through it. And then 9/11 happened. So I kind of like got completely derailed by that. But after Sarah Koenig finished her show, I was like, okay, he's still in prison. So we are not done. And also Serial was the biggest blockbuster in podcasting, but it got a lot of stuff wrong and it missed a lot of things. So me and two other lawyers teamed up and started Undisclosed just to talk about Adnan's case. But then it kept going.
So for those people who don't know, Sarah Koenig had Serial, which was all about, you know, getting into these cases and being an investigative reporter and journalist and finding out the details of these types of murder cases. And that also put the Adnan case on the map. So anybody listening to this, if you've not watched the documentary on HBO, you should watch it. It's called The Case Against Adnan Syed. Also, your book is the same title, correct?
The book is called Adnan's Story.
Adnan's Story.
Yeah, I actually have a. I'm gonna send you a copy out in the next day or so. This is the book, Adnan's Story. It's in paperback now, but the book is very different than like every single time this story has been covered, whether it was in the podcast or the documentary or the book. It's been covered in a very different way, and I think the book gives a lot. Like for example, I start every chapter of the book with a passage from the Quran, because I wanted for people to really understand like the context of this community and who we were and how we thought about the world, how we thought about justice and truth and even sin, right? The concept of sin, because that was a big deal in the trial. They said that, you know, Adnan killed her because he knew he had sinned against his faith and he had to hide that sin. I mean, just crazy, crazy theories here.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And you know, one thing that's interesting is because Adnan reminds me of me. It reminds me of Tehran. It reminds me of any person, immigrant, people from that part of the world who have come to America. And we come and we Americanize. And we this idea, by the way, this idea of like honor killings, et cetera, it's not like you go, you know, like everybody in Pakistan is going, yes, we support honor killings. Right. Similar to what, you know, you might find somewhere in America, there's cultures and people of that mind that might say that, you know, oh yes, you should kill that person because we are so, we're so zealous in our beliefs and in our religion that you've sinned. Therefore, I will do this.
Look, domestic violence, and I have been a DV advocate for a long time. I'm a DV survivor myself. Domestic violence is endemic in this country. And so sexual assault and sexual violence, but we pathologize it when it's people of color. We give it a name like honor killing, as if that kind of shit doesn't happen here and women don't get killed every single day at the hands of the partners. So
100%. In fact, that's the number one most likely way that someone will get murdered. People always love saying it's, oh, the black guy in a hoodie, when it, by far it's like 65%. It's the guy that you're sleeping with, especially for white women. Yeah. And we love demonizing people of color for this, but if I showed the Ozarks only and told the world that this was America, America wouldn't look so great either. This is a minority of a minority of a minority, and there aren't that many cases, and they're all deplorable and unfortunate. And I think that any logical, pragmatic person would have that opinion, no matter what culture, ethnicity, race, religion, color.
I mean, when it's a white person and it's not a white Muslim, let's say, then, and you have intimate partner violence, it's considered intimate partner violence. If it's a Muslim man who does the same thing as a white guy just did, then it's suddenly an honor killing, because again, it's just a way to pathologize the entire, our entire community and society. Like, we have, this is like built into our DNA somehow.
Yeah. It's like a Muslim does some atrocious act, like going into a synagogue and holding people hostage, he's a terrorist. But you get a bunch of white dudes who attack the U.S. Capitol, and it's, what do they call it? It's political dialogue, discourse. It's nuts.
And they're wrong. We know that they're wrong. The guy going to the synagogue is wrong.
That
is
absolutely wrong. Yeah.
That's wrong. And no one within reason of mine supports them, no matter what that. But I do have with Adnan, I swear immigrant parents used him as the case for why kids shouldn't date. Like, see, like they would be like, dating is, see, like he like ruined it for like every immigrant kid for like 20 years, you know?
I gotta say, the response from the Muslim community in the wake of like the huge success of Serial and HBO has been some of the most difficult to stomach, because one was, yes, this. I even got requests from like Islamic schools to come and talk to the students about, like, do a whole presentation, like, this is what happens when you date or smoke pot. And I was like, have you lost your minds? Like, do you not see what's happening? Like, the bigger picture here is like this child has lost his life. And the other response I got from the Muslim community was, you should never have let this go public, because now Muslim kids are going to listen to this and think, oh, he was doing that kind of stuff. Like, I can do that kind of stuff. And I was like, you're all crazy. I was so disappointed.
Isn't it
crazy? Once again, some people, small groups of people. Let's point that out here.
But it's crazy when your own community, because you think, oh, I'm doing this for us. You know, this is one of us being accused wrongfully. Let's come gather together and tell the story of how, you know, our culture, our community, our religion, our background preaches peace, and there's no way he would do this. This kid grew up in a family of support, and let's help save this guy. And then you have people going like, don't encourage pot smoking. And you're like, what? Pot? Right. They totally missed the point.
Yeah. I mean, Devron, I mean, you might be right that it might be small pockets of people, but to be honest, it was, those were the people who mostly reached out to me. I've probably done over 100 events related to Adnan's case, where I've been invited all around the country to speak about the case, law schools, community events, law firms, like all kinds of things, universities. I have never once been invited by a Muslim organization, association to talk about this case. And my audience is almost 90% like white women, because true crime is also a genre that particularly attracts white women, probably for the reason you cited.
Well, Dateline, have you ever watched Dateline? It's full of them. But in this regards, I would say this, it happens to always be a loud minority that reaches out. The quiet majority, or the people that should reach out, they're not part of these organizations. It's a large portion of, for example, non-secular Muslims or anyone who just were like relating to the story, right? As an immigrant kid with some Muslim background, I related to the story, especially because it was very close to my area. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and right outside in Virginia. This was in Baltimore. It was a very prevalent story when it hit the news cycle the first time, and then when it came back. And I'll tell you this, most of the people, when I say 95% of the people I knew, were all backing Adnan, or the concept of justice, at least, because I don't know what happened. I just know just injustice did happen.
Yeah.
We're the people who didn't reach out. We didn't reach out. You're right. Because
I'm happy to hear that.
Right.
And also, by the way, it takes some progressive thinking to think the way we now are thinking, which is we come from these cultures where they say, don't air out the family secrets, keep it a secret, don't tell anybody. And I think that our generation and the next generations are learning the strength, the power of talking about all the skeletons that might be in the cultures. And they're not even skeletons. In this case, not a skeleton. This kid ends up in a situation that is a situation he can't help, and he's being accused. And so we have two options. Like you said, we either just go quietly and we go, let that Syed family deal with it and let the kid go away and let's just move on. Or you think progressively and you go, no, we got to air this out.
Yeah.
Because it's you know, I've experienced that with several other things. You know, that we still have in my culture, and even in stand-up comedy, as you said, when we perform, we get people from all backgrounds. And most of the people are supportive. They're laughing. They're having a good time. But once in a while, you get somebody who's like, okay, that's enough talking about, you know, your father.
You crossed the line, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, your dad used to not, you know, spend time with you. That's it. Stop shitting on Persian parents. Literally, Tehranos, we were in Atlanta one time. I was doing a show. There was some like lady like in the front, and she was this older lady. She was in her mid-60s or late 60s or so. I'm doing my dad, and she's like, she was disappointed. She goes, okay, that's enough about your father. Let's, you know, keep him. Next jokes.
So funny. I'm so sorry that I started laughing about
like,
that.
Like, did your father send her?
Oh my gosh. It was so, she was so disapproving of Maz's. Yeah. By the way, his dad jokes are very fun. They're not.
Oh my God.
I'm not shitting on my, I mean, it's.
They're cute. Yeah. They're fun. They're immigrant father jokes.
It's loving. It's loving. Yeah. I know. I totally get it. And I'm right there along with you. Like last week, my parents called 911 and they came out because they couldn't figure out how to turn off their oven. And see, I'm like, these are the kinds of things that
That's hilarious.
Yeah, always going to like laugh about, but in a loving way.
So then you go on at that point and you become this prolific podcaster. And now you've got Undisclosed, which I was listening to, which is brilliant, which is you bring on other cases, murder cases, where there's flaws, where there's discrepancies. You look into those, you do a deep dive into those. You had the Gin podcast, which was, by the way, which led to your next podcast, Nighty Night, which I got to tell you, when I was listening to, it's called the Gin, and what's it called again?
The Hidden Gin?
The Hidden Gin, which is, as I'm listening to you talk about The Hidden Gin, for those people who don't know, it's basically like the genie and spirits and ghosts and all that. But as I'm listening to you, and you can talk about it a little bit, I'll tell you from the listener side, as I'm listening to you, first of all, I'm going, my God, this woman is brilliant, because you have so many details that you get into. And I personally am not someone that retains so much, but I believe probably from your upbringing and the study of the Quran and history and whatever else you have this breadth of knowledge, because you go from talking about murder cases to now the Hidden Gin. And I realized as I was listening, your voice is so soothing. I'm not kidding. I was in and out. I was going in. I was like, oh my God, I'm falling asleep. What a great voice. I was like, this is, and then I woke up and I was like, oh wow, the story keeps going, which then leads to your next podcast. Explain all this stuff. I'm not doing a good job of it. Tell us all about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, with Undisclosed, you know, we did like 40 episodes on Adnan's case. When I say we, it's me and two other attorneys, because that's how attorneys would investigate a case and prove his innocence in a way that Serial wasn't able to. And also show everything that the state got wrong. And as soon as we finished, we had innocence projects from around the country and innocent defendants reach out and say, oh my God, can you work on our case? And so it's been remarkable, because when an innocence project, which that's their full-time job, has hit a wall, they reach out to us it means like, you know, we can really make a difference. So we've worked with Innocence. My most recent case was with the Innocence Project, New England Innocence Project. We work with them across the country. We also work with defendants who have never, who have had not had a lawyer in 20 years or not represented. And we've done 26 cases. We will reinvestigate. We will get all the documents. I will find the witnesses again. 20, 30 year old murder cases. They're all murder cases, all innocence cases. And we've helped to bring home 12 of our defendants in the last
10
years. Yeah.
I would applaud, but that's not good for sound. Let's just do it anyway. Yeah. Let's, Tehran, applaud that.
I mean, that's actually, it's very difficult statistically speaking, even one appeal. People don't realize, like, you hear the term appeal, but it's very difficult to get a case appealed. But to do what you're doing with 12 over 7 years, that's an amazing, commendable statistic, to be very honest.
You guys got Steve Bannon out of prison, right? I'm kidding. Never, that's never. A joke.
How do you do that?
Go on.
Oh my God. No, we are very, our criteria for defendants is very strict, and Steve Bannon wouldn't make the cut. But the thing is, you know, we're able to do things that a lot of these small projects can't do. Because our podcast gets sponsors, the sponsors pay for us, right? So we can reinvestigate a case, which might cost them $100,000 to do if they hired somebody, for free. So there's no cost to the defendant. There's no cost to the Innocence Project. We can do all this incredible on the grounds investigation that they can't afford to do. And that's what makes all the difference in these cases most of the time. Anyhow, so I've always been a fan. I grew up, I love murder mysteries, Nancy Drew, spooky stuff. And I love, there's a podcast, one of my favorite podcasts called Lore, which is all about North American folklore. And I know the producer and host. And I was like, Aaron, would you ever do folklore like outside of North America and Europe? Because there's this huge body of folklore related to this creature called the djinn all across the Muslim world. And he's like, no, I wouldn't, because I'm a white guy and I probably shouldn't be delving into stuff like that. And a couple of years go by and he comes back. He's like, would you do it? And I was like, oh, I need a creative project. I would love to do this. So I spent 10 months. I have a whole stack of djinn books, which my husband, it freaks him out because he's like, we are definitely getting possessed or something just because of these books. I spent 10 months researching. I found that the origin of the djinn story goes back way before. I'm talking about apocryphal Jewish writings mentioned the djinn, right? Like, so they, it's even Assyrian and Babylonian, so pre-Abrahamic religions have this concept of a djinn or genie that's all very similar. And after I did the podcast, during the podcast, I got emails from people of every background possible, like Indonesia and Fiji and like just Africa. I mean, all kinds of saying, this mythology that you're sharing is just like this mythology in my culture. And I also got emails from people claiming to be djinn, and I got emails asking how to rid themselves of djinn. I mean, it was a hell of a ride. But people liked listening to my voice because it was a single voice narration. And they said, can you just read some stories to us? So then we came up with this concept of Nighty Night, where I just read like bedtime stories. And yes, many people do fall asleep.
and they're scary stories. Is that right?
They're not like gory scary, but they're like creepy. So the very first story, we have writers, but I wrote a couple of stories. And the first story is called Rot. It's based on Edgar Allan Poe's Telltale Heart.
I love it.
And my own super natural sense of smell. And how, so the story is like me as a narrator, I'm going mad because of all the rot that I smell around me.
So this is great.
And
that
rot is people. That rot is human beings and their souls.
That is exactly correct. Exactly.
So people listening to this, you can listen to Rabia all, you have like different hours of the day. For your drive, you're going to listen to Undisclosed because that's breaking down the murder cases and Innocence Projects. And then, in the evening while you're cooking, you listen to djinn, you know, it's very spiritual and it's talking about the genie and all that stuff. And then at night, nighty night, I'm going to start listening. At nighttime, I tend to do like the last thing I do is I'm watching news or ESPN or something, but nighty night, your podcast has now become my go-to. I'm going to start listening because I love Telltale Heart, by the way. That was a great Edgar Allan Poe story.
It's my favorite. I love Poe. Well, I'm excited that you'll fall asleep listening to and probably not finishing my story. That's good.
That's a great marketing technique, which is to keep putting people to sleep. I'm going to do that with my stand-up comedy specials. Like halfway through, I put you to sleep, so you have to go back and watch it again. And then they're going to be like, your special got a million views. I'd be like, I don't know why.
Could 12 it be people.
Yeah, could it be because I did the I did the hypnosis in the middle of my act. Could it be that?
All you're gonna do is just lower your register, Moz, and speak a little slower, and that's it. You know, hypnotic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, Rabia, now that you're in this world, because I was thinking about this too. I was like, my parents wanted me to go be a lawyer. Tehran went to law school, got his degree.
Oh, awesome.
If I were to be a lawyer, I'd want to be your kind of lawyer. I mean, I think that you are a lawyer who's on the right side of things. So are you practicing law anymore, or have you just become this podcast guru who's now a producer who's, I don't know, you can start making TV shows? What's next? What are you doing next?
Well, you know, I am still licensed, and I practiced immigration and civil rights law for like 15 years. And I, like right now, I consider myself an innocence attorney, like a post-conviction innocence attorney. So it's not like I'm in court, but I'm doing all the work to get people in court, back in court, who've already been convicted. And I've just made the pivot completely because there's no way for me to split the work I was doing in the other field and then do this. I had to make the pivot completely. Having said that, though, just in the last couple of years, because it's, I did immigration for so long, and I started off immigration doing asylee and refugee work. I've been, my partner and I have represented a friend, she's a friend, but we've been working together on legal cases, represented a number of Uyghur Chinese Muslim clients in their asylum cases here in America. So I still have those cases, which I just kind of quietly represent because they're important to me. That work's important to me. And I feel like we know, I know enough to be able to help. So yeah, that's kind of like my little bit of practice, but really most of my practice is now this innocence work.
See, I'm so inspired by your podcast work. When you say you've been representing immigrant and asylum seekers, I'm like, that's the next podcast. It's like
the immigration
project, the Uyghur. I mean, you got so, I mean, I want more.
Do you know
Rabia,
what I want to do?
What?
Do you know what I want to do? And yeah. I just need to find a way to fund it. And I think it marries completely my work in the Muslim community and my work on innocence is to do post 9/11 terror convictions that happened in this country. Because people are very focused on Guantanamo. They have no idea the shit show that happened in the circuit courts in this country and the absolute egregious convictions and prosecutions that took place in like the aftermath of 9/11 and the panic people were having. We put away kids for life in Supermax and forgot about them because we were scared of Muslim boys. And that's the show I want to do. And I just need to like, I have a team in place. I just don't have the funding in place.
What do you mean you don't have the funding? You're Rabia Chaudhry. Like you got to walk
gotta,
in. Come on.
I got to sell the show so I can pay the people who are going to be doing the work. Right. Like, and I haven't been able to sell the show yet.
Well, the good news is Rabia, our show only has 5 listeners, but one of them is a billionaire.
One of them is.
Jeff,
is that right?
It's Jeff Bezos. Jeff, we need the funding. This is a great idea. Let's just do it. By the way, I know I love these stories. You just talked about all these wrongful convictions. There was the conviction of the kid in Lodi whose dad was an ice cream truck driver, and he and the FBI, some FBI informant comes in and befriends him, and the kid's a little cuckoo.
Yeah,
and then the FBI informant is like, we should blow something up. And the kid's like, yeah, it's a good idea. and then they go, you're under arrest.
America is ready. America is now ready to be like, shit, we've really screwed this up. We actually really effed up. They're ready to hear these stories. And because a lot of these cases happened in the Fourth Circuit here in Virginia. I went to some of the trials. Secret evidence, even the idea of secret evidence, you've got a kid. I mean, my daughter went to an Islamic school here. The third grade teacher from her Islamic school, the third grade teacher got sentenced to 35 years for driving some guy who was buying paintballs. He didn't even know what he was doing. Like, I mean, egregious. And people need to hear this. I mean, those lives, nobody knows about those stories.
I'm sorry. The third grade teacher drove a guy to buy paintballs. So what did the guy say? Like, you need paint for your class. Let's go get paintballs.
What actually happened from what we know, because again, it's very hard to get documents in these cases. What we know is there was some guy visiting from the UK, and you know how our communities are. So the teacher didn't know him, but somebody asked him. He said, can you take this guy? He needs to mail something at the post office. Could you just give him a ride? He's staying with me or something. And the teacher's like, all right. This teacher had just gotten married. His wife was pregnant. He was a young guy, really sweet third grade teacher. He drives the guy. The guy ships a bunch of paintballs to Kashmir, okay? First of all, I mean, like, maybe that's not a great thing to do, but does it rise to the level of putting someone away? So that guy goes back to the UK, gets caught, sentenced to 12 years. But America is like, no, we do it bigger. They got this guy who did the driving and put him away for 35 years. He's never seen.
Were they nuclear paintballs?
Yeah, I was going to say, I have so many questions. Like, so does that mean, like, if we watch the war in Kashmir now, the guys who have paint on them are the ones he was arming the side that didn't have?
Like, this is the hysteria. This is the hysteria that overcame all of us, left to right, liberal to conservative, because we were okay with this shit.
I'm sorry, I got to interrupt all this for a second. Tehran knows I always got to go to this. So you're talking about all this stuff. So I was listening to Undisclosed. You said there's a saying in the legal world where you say a grand jury can convict a ham sandwich, right? Or indict a ham sandwich. Is that what it was?
Indict a ham sandwich, yeah.
Can you explain to the listeners, first of all, what a grand jury is? And secondly, why we haven't indicted Donald Trump yet?
So a grand jury is a mechanism that is ideally supposed to keep prosecutors in check before a prosecutor before the charges go in front of a court and there's an actual trial. They will present these charges or present a case to a grand jury, sealed proceedings. Defendant's not allowed to be there. His attorney's not allowed to be there. No evidence to the contrary. Only the prosecutor decides what's presented to the jury so he can leave out shit. And he basically says to the jury, tell me whether or not I have enough to proceed on and take this case to trial. That's why a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich, because if I am alone presenting a case and I'm leaving out exculpatory evidence for innocence, I can present whatever I want. And so the problem is charges against Donald Trump have not been levied yet. So we might get to a grand jury phase once charges have been, no criminal charges have ever been brought against him yet. I mean, and I think the reason for that is that prosecutors want to make sure that they can make a charge stick. So they'll wait until the case is as ripe as it can get. They have all the evidence. You get one shot at this. You know, you've got double jeopardy. You can't try somebody for the same crime twice. So they want to like make everything. And then there's questions of presidential, privilege.
Immunity.
Yeah, immunity, privilege. There's also...
Also the precedent. It's the precedent because it's a president of the United States.
Yeah. And, you know, America is very loath to prosecute anybody that might come across like a political opponents, right? So the Biden DOJ prosecuting Trump could seem like something that would happen in a Russia or China or something, even though it might be completely warranted here. And so we're kind of loath to do that.
So currently the attorney general in Georgia is the closest or is the, cause she's the one who said that given the phone call that he made to Raffensperger saying, find me 11,000 votes, the pressure he had, the pressure campaign to overturn the election in Georgia. It's so out there, so obvious that she currently has said she may go to a grand jury because she's getting all of her ducks in a row to possibly do that, correct?
You know, I'll be honest. So, you know, during the Trump administration, I hosted a podcast called The 45th, where me and another attorney every single week talked about the news around Trump and the administration and the policies. And ever since that man has been out, I have almost completely checked out because it burned me out. So I don't know exactly what's going on state by state. That does sound correct. If anybody would do it, it would be the Attorney General of Georgia. But I will also say I heard the other day that, Madison Cawthorn, who is like just such a horrible human being and a joke as a legislator, that he might be prevented from being on the ballot for the next election, next time he runs, because he had some connection to the January 6th insurrection. And I think this is a fair way to approach this. If you can't prosecute them criminally, at least based on that kind of highly unethical and probably criminal behavior, prevent them from running again. Prevent Trump from being on the ballot again. Be like, you can never be on the ballot again. I mean, like,
that's more dangerous. I'm sorry, I disagree. It's more dangerous.
Why is that?
Setting that precedent makes it so that states then can do that for anybody that the people don't deem worthy of being on a ballot. It's up to the people's choice. And that's how democracy works. If we want to prosecute him, it needs to be on the federal level. He's the president of the United States, or at least he was. And that's the conversation for the overallness of justice.
But the thing is, election commissions in every single jurisdiction around the country set rules for who can run. Like if I want to run for attorney, if I want to run for Attorney General of Maryland, I have to meet a certain set of criteria, right?
I agree. If it was, if he was the mayor or governor or of something of a state, I would agree. But I apologize. But when it comes to the federal level, this is a federal prosecution, and we do not coagulate or conflict federal and state mandates, laws, or rights.
I will apologize to both of you attorneys and say all I want to see is him being let out in handcuffs. That's all.
That's your dream in life. That's all your dream in life.
I would put that on loop. Like that would be my boomerang forever. Just him going back in. Preferably just going in.
Times like this, I'm glad I believe in heaven and hell because I'm like, you know, life is short, man, but you got the rest of eternity. So he'll pay for it one way or the other. It's how I feel.
Rabia, listen. Oh, Tehran, you have one more
question. I have a question. Yeah, when it comes to paying for it, since you're working with Innocence Projects and all these possible, you know, they're convicted already and they're trying to get out, they don't have money. How do you get paid? How do podcast people make money? How does Rabia pay her bills?
Yeah, so I actually worked a full-time job while I was podcasting up until 4 years ago when I had a surprise baby in my 40s. And then I couldn't, but our podcasts, you know, all my podcasts do get paid because if you have a certain amount of listens, you will get sponsors or ads and people will hear the ads. In Nighty Night, you'll hear me, you know, intoning deeply about like vitamins that are great for my skin. But, you know.
That's so funny.
Wonderful skin. You do have wonderful skin. Yeah.
Thank you. But I vet every product. I won't say yes to everyone. I'll say no to someone, you know, and that's it. Ads. Not all podcasts are able to get them. Unfortunately, there's some great shows that aren't able to get the amount of listens you need. But when you do get a certain amount of listens, you know, there are sales organizations that you can hook up with. There's platforms like Audioboom or iHeartRadio or Cast Media or different media companies that will take you on, maybe buy your show and things like that.
Just to troll those people from the community who are upset that you advertised, you know, Adnan's story was encouraging marijuana use. You should definitely get a weed dispensary as one of your sponsors, so you could be like, try weed, and they'd be like, I knew it. She's got the weed agenda.
I have turned down CBD oil and hemp. Like I've turned down those kinds of, only because I'm not gonna let those folks like screw up my moral. You know, I mean, look. Here's the thing. It's not like I have lived a life like a nonce, to be honest. Like I've never done it myself. Like I have no idea, but I will defend his right to be a kid and make his decisions. I mean, like our community, and I think any religious community, they can be harder on you than God himself is how I feel about it.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Listen, I could talk to you for years and years and years, and I hope we talk some more. Also, I think we should produce a TV show together. I think there's a fictionalized TV show somewhere here where we can get into all this stuff. I don't know if it's a dramedy, a comedy, a drama. I'm not sure what it is, but I want to work with you. You are brilliant, and I want to work with you.
I would love to. That would be a dream come true. Mr. Bezos, make it happen. help us free some folks who don't deserve at least to be in the Supermaxes. So
let's go now.
Get Kim Kardashian on the case.
Yeah.
Seriously, I love her work. I love her for what she's doing, man. Good on her.
All right, we're going to now do the speed round. This is called Back to School with Rabia Chaudhry. Back to School. Five quick questions, five quick answers. Number one, were you popular in high school?
No.
That was easy. What did you want to be in high school?
A doctor that worked with the Peace Corps.
Always doing good. Look at you. What would you tell your high school self if you could tell yourself one thing?
All that reading was worth it. Keep reading.
I love it. Be curious. What other profession would you do if you could?
I'd be a tree doctor.
Tree doctor?
I love trees.
I keep blowing my mind as to how good you are. You're the modern day Mother Teresa.
I love to garden and I love trees.
Oh my God. Do you recommend people get into your profession and why?
100% on every side of the aisle. We need good people to be prosecutors and defense attorneys. We need good people at every rung of government. And lawyers are damn powerful in this country.
You are amazing. Tehran, what did you learn on this episode?
Not to date in high school and or use marijuana.
Good for you. I learned that Jeff Bezos needs to start funding some Muslim projects. So we're going to have to talk to him about that.
Well, do you feel like you're not funded as much because of the brownality of your shows? Like it's Middle Eastern based or Muslim based in that way?
Well, listen, undisclosed, our defendants are all, I spent a year in like Tennessee trailer parks talking to just white, poor white people. You know, we have defendants of every background. Yeah, Hidden Gin sure was, but Hidden Gin speaks to people of every background as well. No, I just think right now, you know, it's interesting. We've tried to sell some other, like there's some amazing innocence cases that I feel like should be series by themselves. We've even gone to networks. We've done some pitches and they're like, do you have some serial killers? Because, you know, innocence is, we're getting kind of boring. I'm like, no, I don't have a serial killer for you, but you know, fine. I understand where you're at. But I've told my agency, WME represents me. I said, if I have to pay for it out of my own pocket, I'm going to make this counterterrorism case, conviction case podcast one way or the other one day. And if any of you want to work with me on it to help get this off the ground, let's do it. Or anything. I'd love to work with you guys.
Guys, you got to work with Rabia. That's going to be my next podcast. You got to work with Rabia. You find Rabia on Twitter at Rabia Squared, just the word squared, on Instagram at Rabia Squared 2, because she messed up her login and had to do 2, the number 2. So at Rabia Squared, Squared 2 on Instagram. Her podcasts are Hidden Gin, Undisclosed, and currently Nighty Night. You can watch the HBO special, the documentary, The Case Against Adnan Syed. You can read the book, which is Adnan's story. It's a New York Times bestseller. And you're currently doing live events. Am I correct?
I'm just doing like an Instagram live, but I do have a memoir coming out later this year, which I would love to plug. It's called Fatty Fatty Boom Boom, and it's going to be published in November. It's a memoir about food, fat, and family.
And are you doing at the Kennedy Center in March? You said the same night that Tehran and I are there, you're there doing what?
I'm there to completely steal your thunder. I'm doing a story. There's an organization in DC called, I think it's called StoryCorps, if I'm not wrong. And we're doing a storytelling night of stories about women for women by women. And I'll be telling a story there.
And that's Friday, March 18th, am I correct?
Friday, March 18th. Yeah, I haven't gotten the materials yet, but when I do, I'll like tweet them out and everything.
So what you people do is you come to the Kennedy Center Friday, March 18th. It's Brown Night. She's there. I'm there. Tehran is there. And come check us all out. Yes. Find her. Follow her. Rabia Chaudhry, thank you for being on Back to School with Maz Jobrani. Thank you for listening to another episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. We hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're having fun, and we hope you're learning something. So make sure to let your friends know, share it on iTunes, share the clips from YouTube. Just get it out there. However you're listening, let your friends know to tune in to Back to School with Maz Jobrani. Back to school. Yeah.